Thank you, Scott. That was extremely well done. After that, I can hardly wait to hear what I have to say. It's good to be back. This room carries many memories for me. Board for Higher Education held many plenary sessions here, that is, with all the colleges and seminaries. We had academic deans meetings here, registrars, and you name it. It's been renamed. We used to call it by another name. When the Aid Association for Lutherans purchased all this furniture and donated it to the seminary, the room was just packed with furniture. And the largest furniture house in St. Louis was Biederman's. And this room became known as Biederman's Warehouse. I've been trying to figure out how to introduce the topic, and I think I'll do it this way. My work, as you can imagine, takes me on the road for extended periods of time. I just came back from 2 weeks in Arizona and Southern California, where, incidentally, I picked up a good throat infection. I was at my desk plowing through the mail. The telephone rang. You have to understand that my office is in my home. And I picked up the phone, and this three-year-old boy said, "Grandpa?" And I said, "Yes, who's this?" And she said, "This is Leah." And I said, "What's your last name, Leah?" And she said, "Schultz." I said, "Where do you live?" She said, "St. Louis." "What street do you live on?" And she said, "Heartland." And I said, "What's your house number?" And she said, 2411. I said, "What's your phone number?" And there was a long pause. And I thought she'd walked off from the phone. But finally, this little voice came back to me and said, "I just wanted to talk to Grandma." She did not expect that kind of questioning when she called. I'm not sure that I know what you expected this morning. I can tell you what I am not going to do. This is not going to be a theological study of teen ministry. This is going to be an attempt to sensitize you to some of the problems, the extent, the joys, the characteristics of teen ministry. It does not come from textbooks. It does not come from what you might call scientific, objective research. It's based largely on my experience, my working with people, particularly in the last 6+ years in the parish, and before that, attempting to develop teen ministries in various places in the synodical system. So, I'd like to talk with you for a while, then I'm going to ask you to do some hands-on things to give you a feel of team-building processes, and then we'll try to close it up and feel free to ask questions along the way, but also recognize that we will allow some time at the end for questions. If you'll take a look at the outline distributed, there are some definitions there. It's always helpful when you do something like this, to have a common understanding of the terms used. Incidentally, I don't feel badly about these empty seats. I really expected more because Gene Garten is an awfully hard act to follow, right? Okay. Teamwork, joint action by two or more people in which each person subordinates his individual interests and opinions to the unity and efficiency of the group. A coordinated effort. There are some key words there. Each person subordinates, is willing to modify, is willing to adjust their own individual interests and opinions in order to promote unity and efficiency of the group. I use multiple staff and team ministry in two different ways. Multiple staff is defined here as two or more paid professional persons working together in one agency performing related ministries. Related ministries. It is my assumption that every ministry in the congregation is related to every other ministry because they are all working toward the accomplishment of the congregation's mission through that particular ministry. Multiple staff is two or more paid professional persons working together in one agency performing related ministries. And then a note. A multiple staff is in team ministry when it practices teamwork. You may have a multiple staff that is not in team ministry, but a multiple staff has the potential to become a team ministry. And that's the distinction between the two terms. Multiple staff ministry in the LCMS. I don't know if you've thought about this, because ordinarily people think of pastor and assistant pastor as a multiple staff. But there are many variations. According to our Director of Personnel, Bill Barge, of the Synodical Offices, there are 500 multiple, that is, dual plus pastorates involving over 1,000 pastors. There are 350 Director of Christian Education Ministries. Very rarely are there two DCEs in a congregation. So we have just added another about 350 congregations. There are 150 lay ministries, most of whom are working under the supervision of a pastor. There are approximately 1,800 Lutheran elementary and preschools. Preschools are growing at the rate unheard of in recent years. My experience in the English district is that we're opening a minimum of three each year. And we are starting congregations through preschools. The first unit constructed is a multi-purpose unit, but designed primarily for a preschool. And the first person being called is someone with preschool experience, so that they can give direction, if not also teach, the preschool. This is an outreach into the community. It provides a community service, but it also gives you a beautiful list of evangelism opportunities. And some of these preschools, on our recommendation, are adding a condition, expectation of the parents, which means the parent is expected to open their home to visits by the teacher or by a member of the budding congregation. The parent is also expected to attend religious information classes conducted by the pastor or the director of the school, which means that that child serves as an entree into the home, and that the preschool and also our Lutheran elementary schools are capitalizing on that entree. Parents who complete 6 2-hour sessions with the pastor or with his or someone designated by the congregation and who are unchurched are eligible to receive a $100 scholarship directly from the English district budget. That serves as additional motivation. What has been the result? Preschools are growing. The director of Christian education is the first person on the scene. A pastor is called. The congregation grows through the preschool primarily. a team ministry has developed. At the moment, it's multiple staff, but it will grow into a team ministry. If we add these together, and speaking strictly mathematically, there are 2,800 possible multiple staff situations. In 1986, there were 5,235 pastors in the LCMS. Without looking at duplications above, over 50% of our pastors are members of a multiple staff. One in four graduating seminarians will be placed into a multiple staff ministry. I picked this figure out of the jolly blue based on my previous experience on Board for Higher Education staff, and I called your own Professor Hopman and said to him, you know, what percentage of new placements are given to multiple staff ministries? And he just happened to have a figure on hand, and it was 24-point-something%. So our guesstimates are about the same. One in four of you will receive a call into a multiple staff ministry. But if we project this beyond it, it is possible that 60% of all pastors will at some time in their ministry serve in a multi-staff situation. Now, what kinds of multiple staff ministries are there? You're going to be surprised at what I have listed. Pastor and secretary is basic. Have you thought of yourself being in team ministry with your congregation secretary? I don't mean the elected secretary. I mean the one that takes the phone calls, unlocks the door in the morning, opens the mail, maybe types your letters. That person. The basic element of team ministry in the parish is with your secretary. So I have included the secretary in every variation of multiple staff ministry. The second most frequent you're going to find is pastor, secretary, school principal, faculty, and the school secretary. And then pastor, secretary, preschool director, faculty, and teacher aides. Pastor, secretary, assistant pastor. Pastor, secretary, associate pastor. And then pastor, secretary, DCE, director of evangelism, deaconess, lay minister, parish assistant, parish worker, minister of music, and others. A new ministry is evolving in the synod. And if you are not aware of it, I would like to take this opportunity to talk to you a little bit about it. It's called Coordinator of Volunteers or Director of Lay Ministries. This is a person who is employed by the congregation to recruit, train, deploy, evaluate, support, recognize volunteers in the congregation. Our large congregation, Faith Arlington Heights, Illinois, just recently called a full-time coordinator of lay ministries for that congregation. Synodical schools are beginning to see the need to prepare people for this position. Universities and colleges across the country are developing majors in directing volunteers. I did a volunteer workshop in Akron, Ohio, about 6 weeks ago. And one of the people attending the workshops came to me at the break and said, I'm real interested in your resource material. And I said, well, help yourself. And she said, I just graduated from Akron University, and I have a major in volunteerism, and I haven't seen your material before. And my comment to her was, that's probably because I wrote it myself. It is not something taken from textbooks. It's based on experience. The director or coordinator of volunteers, director of lay ministries, is something that's happening in the parishes. A second thing that's happening with regard to team ministry is the establishment of human resource committees. human resource committees. The primary function of this committee is to support the professional workers in their ministry. Help them evaluate where they're at, interpret congregation expectations, provide a listening base for them, be concerned about their physical, spiritual, emotional welfare. That committee includes, among its functions, working with the pastor in addition to the work ordinarily done by the Board of Elders. Let's go on. I'd like to share with you some of the concerns that we have with regard to these different multiple staff ministries. And what I've done is I've just listed some comments made by people in the different categories. And the numbers under Roman 2, 1, 2, and so forth, correspond to the types of multiple staff ministries. I tried to keep this on two pages. The pastor and the secretary, the most frequent comment I hear from pastors is, she's nosy, she talks too much. She wants to know everything that's going on, and she has a tendency to talk too much. In other words, share too much of what's happening in the office with people in the parish, and sometimes bordering on divulging confidential kinds of information. The teammate, the secretary, the most frequent thing I hear from them is, he never tells me anything. When he'll be in, where he can be reached, who's coming, and when. Sound familiar? That almost sounds like my wife talking. When you talk about pastor, secretary, school principal, faculty, and so on, the most frequent thing I hear from the pastor is, the school is his or her or their responsibility, which he seems to feel leaves him without any kind of responsibility or leadership for that particular element of the congregation's ministry. What do you hear from usually the principal? He's the pastor. He's over there and we're over here. There is no communication. When you come to the next group, and it looks like I dropped something out, so forgive me for that. When you come to the next group, pastor, secretary, preschool director, faculty, and aides, the word I hear from the pastor is very similar. The preschool is the director's responsibility. The most frequent comment I hear about a preschool is, from a preschool director is, are we really a part of the congregation's ministry? They feel left out because the pastor does not involve himself in it. Most preschools are self-supporting, so they don't come to the congregation for money. And they're largely ignored by the pastor. May I offer a suggestion in the form of an observation? The preschools that really blossom in our district are those in which the pastor regularly makes an appearance in the preschool, talks with the kids. But the most important element is that he is there when parents either bring or pick up their kids and talk with them, introduce themselves. How are you doing? How do you like preschool? How's the work going? That is a natural bridge to these people. The teachers are interested in the pastor appearing because of the role modeling that he can do. And only he can do it by virtue of his office and the kind of aura that's attached to that office by the kids. Pastor, secretary, assistant pastor. Assistant pastor, the pastor says, he wants to become the head pastor. He wants to do the things in ministry that I'm doing. Most frequent comment. Most frequent comment by the assistant pastor is, I get to do all those things that he doesn't want to do. And if an additional job comes up, I'm asked to do it. And you know what? Most of the things that I'm actually spending my time on are not in my call. So some adjustment has taken place in the congregation's operation by the time this assistant pastor has been there a few months. Pastor secretary, associate pastor. Comments are usually pretty much the same, with one exception. The exception is, one of them will say, he's been here longer and the congregation considers him to be the senior pastor. By virtue of seniority, even though the official structure established by the congregation is that these pastors are equal, salary, etc., and they have separate areas of ministry that are designated and by the congregation to be performed by each. The most frequent comment I hear is the same from both of them, and that is, someday we're going to have to sit down and decide exactly who does what. Because as they work together, different strengths and abilities or interests appear, and adjustment is needed. But they never seem to take the time to do that and bring it to the attention of the congregation. The last one, number 7, pastor, DCE, DE, and so on, is the biggest can of worms you can imagine. Frequent comments by DCEs. They expect me to do everything. I have education. I have youth. I'm training Sunday school teachers. I teach the junior confirmation class. I have 2 youth groups. And it goes on and on. And all the pastor does, and the pastor can be working his, excuse the expression, butt off, but the DCE doesn't see it that way. Excuse me. The second most frequent comment is, no time for meetings. I ask the pastor to schedule a staff meeting, and we do it for 1 or 2 weeks, and then something comes up, and he's called away, and we don't do it anymore. Communication, the basic problem in all human relationships, and particularly in team ministry. We could spend more time on that, but I'm not sure that at this point in time it's necessary. Let's go on. Characteristics, behaviors of an effective pastor. I listed them because I didn't know if we'd have time to talk about them, but I'd like to highlight a couple of them. And the first one to me is extremely important. The effective pastor in a multi-staff situation assumes the initiative for team building. Only the person in charge can actually make it happen. And if you're in a multi-staff situation, and you really want to enhance the ministry of the total group, then it is your responsibility to initiate team building kinds of activities. And we'll give you a chance to do a couple of those in a few minutes. The hurting DCE, school principal, secretary, assistant pastor, is not in the power position to bring this about. They might bring the request to you as pastor, but you're the one that can allow it or cause it to happen. They cannot. Second one is sensitive to the needs of team members, and 2 key words, especially women. The tradition of our church body regarding women is one that's not easily understood and appreciated by many people, especially women. And the traditional viewpoint of the woman in the congregation does not augur well for their leadership role in ministry. So when a female DCE comes aboard, their frequent complaint is, the pastor doesn't know I exist. I am installed on a Sunday morning, and then I'm put into the closet. I have an office in the basement of the church that used to be the custodian's closet. I don't have a telephone. I have a very limited budget. The congregation is led by the pastor in prayer, who talks about the ministry of different people in the parish, but he never mentions me. I get no recognition. I get no support from the pastor. Church council meetings, I'm not allowed to attend because I'm a woman. I have to submit written reports to the chairman of the Board of Education, and he presents my reports to the church council. And one of them that I really appreciated was a comment made to me by a female DCE in a very rural setting, said, "I am finally able to attend voters' meetings. I can't vote, but I can attend. And the pastor has graciously given me 5 minutes of his reporting time." And she was so delighted, she was on cloud nine. Be very sensitive to the needs of any women on your staff, because our church body really doesn't know how to use them effectively in ministry. I'm going to quit at this point and move down to how does a multiple staff become a team. And to paraphrase a commercial that I'm sure you've all seen someplace on television, the answer is the old-fashioned way. They earn it. They earn it through deliberate, planned efforts. And what I'd like to do now is just spend a few minutes getting you to get the feel of team-building kinds of activities. I have an assignment for you. Take a look at your neighbor sitting next to you, or if you're sitting alone, you might want to move over to somebody. And I want you for 2 minutes to talk about yourself to that person. I don't care what you say, but for 2 minutes, you've got to go nonstop talking to your neighbor about yourself. I'll give you about 30 seconds to think of what you're going to say and who you're going to say it to, and then I'm going to ask you to talk for 2 minutes. Okay? All right, your time is up. Thank you for your involvement. Would anyone like to share the kind of thing that was shared in your dyad? What kind of thing was shared? Yes, please. Okay, thank you. Very safe kind of information, isn't it? Yeah, descriptive. Most people, or a lot of people, know it already. I was born in, my parents were, I went to school at, those kinds of things. That's the beginning of this. When you do this in a team-building situation, you don't stop at 2 minutes. You ask them to go 15 or 20 minutes. And they start to run dry after about 5 minutes, and then they shift gears. And they start talking about themselves and how they feel about things and where their interests are and where the problems are and so on. And by the time they've talked for 20 minutes, and what I do is I have a stopwatch, and every time there's a long pause, I shut the stopwatch off. And that gets to be kind of threatening, and the tension builds a bit. Okay? But we're very willing to share the superficial kind of thing, but next, you know, to get into the real gut level things and who I am, that takes a little longer and may not happen at all, because we only expose ourselves to the extent that we want to and are willing to live with. The next exercise I'm not going to ask you to do, but I'm going to ask you to consider doing it sometime in the future. Take a piece of newsprint a large one, and have the individual put their name across the top of it in big, bold letters. Divide that sheet horizontally, about two-thirds the way down, and then leave a space on the bottom. On the left side, the individual should write, "I am," and then ask them to put 10 words there, adjectives that describe themselves. In one occasion when I used this, one individual just, I gave them the assignment and they all had this big sheet of paper, and he sat down and boy, he was through in about a minute. And I was really curious about what I saw, because most people spend a lot of time on 10 words describing themselves, honest, loyal, faithful, trustworthy, that kind of thing. And humble. And I walked over, and here this individual had written the Scout Law, which ends up brave, clean, and reverent. On the right side of that page, have the individual put, "I can," and have them list 10 things that they can do that contribute to the team ministry. On the bottom of that page, and this is the hooker, on the bottom of that page, they list what I call service conditions. Service conditions. If this happens in the team, I become inactive. I withdraw. If you ask me to do something I can't do, I'm going to become inactive. I'm going to withdraw from the team. If you make demands on me that I feel are exorbitant, if meetings last 3 hours when we're only scheduled for one, I'm going to withdraw. What are the conditions under which I would fail to make my maximum contribution to the team? After they've gone through that, then you're ready for the next couple of pages in the book, my work personality. I have listed there 10 minutes for that, and I'm going to chop that back a bit. I'd like to have you take the instrument and then do some sharing with your teammate. Do not give an instrument like this a lot of thought. But you see, what we're doing is we're moving from talking about myself as a person to talking about my personality in working situations. So would you take the instrument, about 3 minutes, and then spend a little time talking about it with your teammate? Anyone who uses the zero is automatically suspect. That means you're a mugwump. You can't make up your mind because your mug is on one side of the fence and your wump is on the other. Again, I'm sorry to interrupt what you're doing, and I regret that, but I wanted you to just to get the feel of sharing some of what you are by way of your work personality with someone else. Just an opportunity to try that. Any observations on your part? Was this a... Yes. A good comment, and a very understandable one. When you get to the second page and you have observations about the other person, if you use the zero, you really aren't saying anything to the other person. And that's the concern here and the reason for kind of ignoring the zero. Does that make sense to you? Okay. Because the intent here is to share of yourself with your teammates. I don't know whether that's, shall we say, defensive or interpreted, but that's the reason for it. Okay. Any other observations? Did you feel threatened by this? Anxiety level go up? Blood pressure? Why not? Why not? What's the answer?
You're rating yourself.
You're rating yourself. Your teammate is doing the same thing, and neither one of you is asking the questions, but the questions are laid before you, and it's not at your initiative, and it's a non-threatening kind of thing. Okay. This kind of technique is very effective in building understanding among teammates. Will you now take a look at the last page, what I call work relationships? We are not going to do this one. I just want to familiarize yourself with it. Periodically, in whatever you're doing, seminarian, first-year pastor, fifth-year pastor, every now and then it is very worthwhile to work through this kind of activity. What are the things that I am doing in the left column? What am I doing? Start with that which consumes most of your time. Assign the percentage to it. Determine whether it is satisfying or dissatisfying and to what extent. And then answer the question, why? It's a very easy way to do a self-evaluation of where you're at in ministry. If you're in a team situation, a multiple staff growing into a team, then my suggestion is you have these team members prepare this beforehand and then bring them to your meeting and share it. A great opportunity to be supportive, to help your teammate, to give them an opportunity to unload, as we say, and for you to provide some positive, constructive input. The last page of the material is one that I've deliberately stayed away from because it comes out of experience and it comes out of listening to people. And it also comes out of, part of it comes out of a growth in ministry workshop called Multiple Staff. This is Issues in Team Ministry, a checklist for those involved in multiple staff or team ministry, with a subtitle of my own, Some Possible Sources of Team Tensions. I struggled with this list and finally decided I would take the key word and line them up alphabetically so I would not imply any kind of preference or frequency of concern. But what it is simply a list of areas that can cause real problems in team relationships unless they are dealt with. That list is for your perusal. I'd like to go back to the joys of team ministry. You can read the characteristics of good, effective teams, but I'm concerned about the joys. What are some of the joys that I see? A strong and readily available support person or group. There are times in your ministry when you're really going to need a support group. And I'm hoping that someplace along the line you take the deliberate effort of developing that support person or team for your own emotional, spiritual, physical well-being. A second joy is ministering in areas of interest and ability and opportunities to grow in selected areas of ministry and have the time and support to be innovative and creative in those areas. I really enjoy doing these kinds of functions in the pastoral office. If you're in a team setting or a multiple staff setting, the possibilities of your being able to work in your areas of strength and interest are greater than if you are the pastor only in the parish. And my reason for saying that is the total functions of the pastoral office have a tendency to be divided. And you have an opportunity to say where my strengths are and where my interests are. And sometimes congregations are even enlightened to the point where they will write a series of expectations based on what the senior pastor prefers not to do in ministry. So you come filling a void, a gap in the total ministry of the congregation. Intensive opportunity to develop human relations skills. I say intensive opportunity, and that's exactly what I mean. Because if you're going to function effectively as a team, human relations is the single most important ingredient. Grow an ability to support and affirm others. Opportunity to learn from other professionals on site. You don't have to go someplace else and take a course or a workshop. You just watch your teammate work and learn from him. And then the joy that comes from close personal professional relationships. The friends, lifelong friends, that you develop at a very penetrating emotional gut level. My final comment is thank you for allowing me the time to be with you and the opportunity, and may God grant you a team ministry experience, and you may you find joy in that ministry. And now, Scott, questions? Okay. See if there's some questions first. Yes, I do that quite regularly.
Only in your district?
Oh, no. The English district, sir, is a very enlightened group. They're willing to share with, you know. I appreciate the opportunity for that commercial. Thank you. Yes. If you look under characteristics of a good effective team, the point that I make is a point G. A good effective team regularly meets for Bible study. I don't know of any single document or series of documents that you can take this person to. My advice usually centers around the DCE bringing this material to this Bible study session and asking the pastor and other teammates for input before it is implemented, before it is used. And if this team meets regularly and they plan, you know, who's going to do what when, then you have enough lead time for the pastor to give whatever input he feels is necessary. One thing I think you need to recognize is that most DCEs really appreciate that, because that's growth on their part too. So if you're willing to take the time, you know, to do this, I'm sure it will meet, you know, with very high acceptance and response. It's lunchtime.